ARUP Institute for Learning presents Insight.
Education.
Leader.
Technology.
Experimental.
Quality.
Esoteric.
Informatics.
Clinical utility.
Patient care.
Research. Laboratory.
Excellence.
Join us as we delve into emerging topics presented by ARUP medical directors who are faculty in the Department of Pathology at the University of Utah School of Medicine.
Tonight, healthcare takes center stage.
The stakes are
millions
high.
Of Americans.
Let's begin with the problems in our current healthcare system.
Yeah, and who's in
but
it?
But this question about healthcare sparks passionate debate.
We've heard Dr. Jackson and Dr. Schmidt make their way through various topics. Listen as they discuss how to generate evidence-based diagnostics, as well as Dr. Schmidt's experience with Australia's healthcare system.
Another item that you mentioned on that hierarchy that I think is interesting to a lot of people is you mentioned cost-effectiveness or economic analysis. I hear a lot of perception in the general medical community. The one thing that's really needed in our society is a better assessment of cost-effectiveness of things.
Yeah, well, those are difficult to do because we don't have many trials that relate diagnostic testing to outcomes. So the gold standard would be to randomize people to having the test and people not having the test and see whether one group does better than the other. Well, that's a very expensive trial to do, one that these kinds of trials tend to be inefficient and you need very large numbers. So it's going to be very expensive for a very small payoff. So there's not a lot of motivation to do that. So the way around that is to do simulation analysis where you look at who would be classified differently as a result of the test, and then take data from clinical trials and go, okay, if we had some sort of decision rule of treating people differently based on the result of a diagnostic test, what would be the outcomes? It's not as good as doing the test, the clinical trial itself, but it's a good proxy for that. Part of the problem is that there's just not, I think, many people in the diagnostic area that are trained in cost-effectiveness analysis or have much interest in it, really. It's not part of pathology training. It's really outside of that. And people that do it really need some of both. And it's really a gap for us. In terms of cost-effectiveness analyses published, there was just a review done by the Tufts Cost-Effectiveness Center where they looked at about 1,400 cost-effectiveness analyses over the last decade. And only about I think it was 9% of them dealt with diagnostic tests, and that's including radiology and everything. So laboratory tests are going to be quite a bit less.
So at multiple different levels now, you know, diagnostic accuracy, clinical impact, cost effectiveness, at all of these different levels, you're identifying these are really fundamentally hard things to do, hard to generate the evidence base. What are your thoughts here? Is there light at the end of this tunnel?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One is just doing simpler analyses that are probably good enough, but not, and recognizing that they have an asterisk behind them, that they're not perfectly rigorous, but it's better than nothing. So I think that's one approach. The other is, I think, people being responsible for the costs of testing. Now, all of a sudden, the locus of decision-making has been pushed from a higher level, from insurance companies, down to a local level of hospitals and provider groups. So now you have a great deal of duplication of effort. You have some genetic test, and now thousands of hospitals across the country of these provider groups are scratching their heads going, should we provide this test? Is this cost effective or not? And given the shortage of resources we have to make those kinds of evaluations, it's nonsensical for all of us to do this individually. So
how many genes are there in the human body that we could
I think it's on the order of 30,000 or something. I have a colleague that I used to sit on some meetings that does cost-effectiveness analysis of genetic tests. One month I went to a meeting and he had a backlog of 300 tests that he had to evaluate. I'll remind you that it takes, you know, a couple of months to do one of these. I came back the following month and his list had grown to 500. So it's a losing battle. So I think we need a way to prioritize and divide the work in a way.
So Bob, as we're talking about cost-effectiveness analysis and evidence-based medicine, there's another aspect of your background that I neglected to bring up in the introduction, which is that you did a significant portion of your training in Australia, which has a different health system that, frankly, I think scares a lot of American physicians who see this as socialized, rationed kind of medicine. Since we're talking about cost-effectiveness, I'm curious to get your take on your experiences.
In my opinion, the Australians have kind of split the middle between the U.S. system and the, say, U.K. system. They do have a lot of centralized control over healthcare, But Adam Smith is smiling in his grave because the magic hand of the market is allowed to work as well. So, for example, for physician visits, they have a national healthcare plan where all citizens are covered. And I don't know what the exact fee is, but let's just say for a GP visit, a GP gets $35 from the government. The GP, unlike in the UK, is allowed to charge whatever the market bears. So you find every kind of service being offered, from people that are churning patients every 5 minutes doing coughs and colds with a very basic service to a much more concierge kind of service that they'll spend an hour with you and charge you $1,000, but and everything in between. I think it's a good combination. And in terms of therapeutics, for the National Health Service, they subsidize drugs that are deemed cost effective. So they go, like the US, they evaluate things for safety and efficacy, like the FDA does here. But in addition, they have to pass a hurdle that they're cost effective. And the government will fund things that are subsidized things that are deemed cost effective. But that doesn't prevent you from a doctor prescribing things that are safe and effective. The government's position is, we've decided this isn't cost effective for us to provide this. That money would be better spent on schools or vaccinations or other priorities that we have. If you feel it's better and your doctor does, go for it.
This won't be paid for.
But we won't pay for it.
Right.
So you know, we won't prevent you. You know, you won't harm yourself. And they drive very high bargains with the pharmaceutical companies. I worked for a little bit with the Therapeutics Goods Administration there. And for example, you'll see something like a new beta blocker, and there's lots of beta blockers on the market. And the new one maybe has once a day dosing versus twice a day dosing. And the Therapeutics Goods Administration will go, yes, that's an advantage. We'll give you 50 cents more a dose, you know, take it or leave it. And I do worry that in a way that may stifle innovation to some extent compared to the U.S. I think that is a trade-off. But by and large, I mean, healthcare in Australia is as good or better than here, and they spend half what we do.
Interesting.
On the next segment.
But it does sound like you think this is very much doable.
Yes.
And something that healthcare organizations should be looking at.
I think they should be. And even with limited evidence, you can make progress.